Music from D.C. and Baltimore, you'll find it all here on Corridor. Waltzes or cut time or straight 4/4, you'll find it all here on Corridor.
Hey, 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 this is Kelsey. Welcome back to the first quarter cast of 2018. Welcome. I hope you all had a great new year and great holidays. Before we get into anything, I just wanted to let you guys know that there'll be a couple changes with the show. I'm going back to the every other week format. I'm going to have a lot on my plate work-wise, so it just makes more sense and will be more sustainable to do this every other week. But we have some great shows coming up, so don't worry about that. This week we have Shauna from War on Women. That was very exciting to me. She was great to talk to. We're going to have the kids from Canker Blossom coming up and Andrew Grimm from June Star. So we're coming back strong. We're swinging for the fences. I'm also hoping that 2018 will be a huge year for Santa Labrada. So much is coming together with the new album. We got the masters back. They sound great. We have cover art. We're about to set up a photo shoot to finish the art. Really looking forward to being able to share that with all of you. I'm super excited. So, like I say, this week's guest is Shauna from War on Women. We talk about their new album that they're working on. We talk about being out on tour. Of course, we talk about feminism. That's huge for that band. We talk about making safer spaces. They're not going to be playing many shows until they drop the new record. So the next thing they have coming up, they'll be at Changeville, February 8th, down in Gainesville, Florida. I'm pretty sure no one listens to this in Gainesville, but if you do, be sure to show up for them. Before we hear from Shauna, let's hear the War on Women track, Swagger. Here we go. I'm here with Shauna from War of Women. How are you? War on Women. Excuse me. How are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me over. I appreciate the time.
So to start with, I thought we could maybe just start at the beginning. Can you talk to me a little bit about how you got into music in the first place?
How I got into music?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even know. How do you even know? It's not a choice, right?
Yeah.
I know of story. My mom tells a story about me dancing in my crib to MTV. So I feel like it's just always been there.
What songs were you dancing to?
Oh, well, at the time, I'm definitely, you know, an 80s baby. So it would certainly be Michael Jackson and Madonna.
Yes.
Paula Abdul, Janet Jackson, stuff like that.
Madonna is a special place in my heart because that was my first concert.
Yo, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Awesome. And so how did War on Women come about? How did you all meet?
It started as a Madonna cover band. No, just kidding.
That could be a side project you do.
Brooks is the male guitarist in the band, and he and I have been playing music for a really long time. I actually moved to Baltimore in order to join a band he was in 2001, 2002. So we've been playing in bands, and we, our last band, Avec, just kind of fizzled out, and we wanted to do something heavier than our last band, and we wanted to do something with a more, like, obvious political lean. We wanted to be an overtly feminist band, and so we started writing new songs and kind of divvying up our roles in the band, and then we just started sending demos to people to see if anyone was interested in playing with us, and the people that started the band with us were the only people that said yes to being in it.
Well, that's good. You didn't have to give anybody bad news.
No. There was not a bunch of people auditioning that were hungry to be in this band of ours. Don't worry about that.
Where did the idea come from to have an expressly feminist band? You don't see too many of those around.
I mean, I think that's why. That's why we felt the need, because at the time, we just we were hungry for that. We wanted to be listening to bands like that that were saying something and stood for something. And we all grew up on Fugazi and Bikini Kill and other bands with a message, but there weren't that many that were still active and still playing and still making music. So we kind of just started the band that we wanted to listen to.
That's always the best way to do it. Yeah. And so I also wanted to talk to you about what it's like being in a feminist band now. I mean, at this moment, we have, you know, Trump's president, but we have accountability for some accused sexual abusers in positions of power. So what's your take on that, your role as a musician now?
Well, I'll tell you, it's changing from how, like, when this band started, I just had some things I had to say, I wanted to get off my chest, and I didn't think that there would be a very big audience to identify with it or listen to it, that, you know, it would be new ideas for a lot of people, not a lot of women, still not a band that they've, not things that people had heard before delivered with kind of like heavier, you know, punk leanings. But now I have started to question what my role as a musician is in this era, because am I here to kind of help other people and validate their experiences and serve as a catharsis for these times? Am I here to distract them from these times? Am I here to put a pin on it and describe it exactly as it is and call it out? And I think those are all a little different. And while I think about it a lot, I don't know that I kind of let autopilot take over when I was writing our new record. I actually didn't want to write about Trump. I avoided it. I didn't want to be so of the time. I think I was probably also hopeful he would be impeached by now so that it would be an out-of-date song or something. Right. So I did end up writing one song about him and kind of, really about men in powerful positions that abuse it. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard because I am part of the marginalized group that is being that is witnessing this moment, you know, that it's based around. So I need to take care of myself It's hard to see all these stories come up over and over again. It's hard to see people shock at the fact that it's happening so much.
Right. Because this isn't, I mean, people have been saying this forever.
Yeah, people are just finally listening to women when they tell their stories. But these things have been happening consistently, relentlessly, forever. But then I'm also grateful that people are taking it seriously. But then I'm also saddened that so many victims are being triggered and having to relive their experiences or have to come forward. And so it's very complicated. And I can't tell if I, you know, I have to balance taking care of myself and then also sort of like, what responsibility does the band have to anyone that listens to us? How can I support them too? And sometimes we just don't post anything on social media and stay off the computer. And that's what we have to do because we're affected by these things on a personal level. It's not theoretical for us.
Mm-hmm. No, and definitely with the way social media is, it can be re-traumatizing, I'd imagine, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just so constant. But you kind of answered this a little bit, but do you think your music is a way to kind of, Is it cathartic? Is your music cathartic for these kinds of situations where people are talking about what has happened to them in the past?
That's what I'm getting from people, that it is. We did Warped Tour this past summer, and so I got to meet a lot of people face to face and hang out with them all summer long that have been listening to us or saw us for the first time, you know, whatever. And especially songs like Say It or Broken Record that are specifically about, you know, sexual harassment and sexual assault from a victim point of view, a lot of people hadn't heard that, and I think needed to, you know, like it was a form of validation, I think, for something they've been through and things they were feeling. And I'm really humbled to be a part of anyone's healing process. You know, that's a really mind-blowing thing, and it's very, I mean, humbling is the word, absolutely. But I don't know if the new record will be cathartic, because again, for me, like a lot of these things, like they've been going on, you know, it's not like some new thing just came out and I could write a song about it. It's like, there's a lot of the same themes and struggles that feminists have been fighting against or for decades.
I want to talk to you more specifically about the new album, but you also mentioned Warped Tour. Mm-hmm. So if we can get to that for a minute, talk to me about Warped Tour. What was it like going out on that?
It was like summer camp for adults. It was really weird.
That's awesome.
It's a complicated thing because there's the personal experience of just hanging out with cool people that are nice. And I'm sure there are people that are not nice and not cool. Okay. And lucky for me, I didn't really come across many of them, or that's I possible. Didn't interact. You know, it's like the people that get it, we found each other really quickly, right? So, and you're also busy. You're busy doing work. There are things to do every second of the day until it's time to leave, mm-hmm. almost. So it's a physically exhausting and draining tour. It's a mentally exhausting tour. There were cool people around to hang out with. So you feel productive, and hopefully supported, but it was just tough. And then it would be pouring down rain, or it'd be 115 degrees. People are passing out, you know, it was wild. There's absolutely nothing like it. I definitely feel like anyone that goes on Warped Tour, like, they have a special bond. Like, you have a special bond with your senior class of high school, or like this shared experience that you can't really share it with anyone else.
Well, like you said, summer camp, right?
Summer camp, exactly. And I never went to summer camp growing up. I never did anything like that. And so I finally sort of understood what people meant when they talked about that, like how you can talk to each other about this summer, but you can't really talk to anyone else because they just won't get it. They weren't there. Of course, there were plenty of bands that were playing that I didn't care for, and bands that I thought were irresponsible and just kind of like offensive in a way that isn't actually challenging anyone in power. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, oh, they were being like rude, yeah. or saying faggot on stage, and they might have their reasons for that, but things like that, they don't interest me. I don't care for that because it's not like they are gay and they're reclaiming it and it's like this celebratory fun thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just someone saying faggot on stage and I'm sorry, but that's not cool with me. Sure. So all kinds of little things like that. But again, you're so busy during the day, it's easy to miss seeing those bands play, luckily.
So you don't have to worry about them. But yeah, I mean, there is kind of, I guess with Warped Tour, there's, I guess you could call it a bro-y aspect. So you just kind of tune that out, is that what you're saying?
We did our best. Yeah. Yeah. There's still definitely that vibe. But, I'll say, certainly this past summer, I can't speak for other years. I never performed at Warped Tour before this past summer. There were a ton of women on stage and behind stage. And when there's more women around, it's palpable, the difference between how people are treated and just general respect and having just a better vibe. That's always going to be the case, no matter what project or tour or whatever you're working on, workplace, anywhere. The more women are there, the better environment for everyone it is. Actually, that's a fact. That's been studied, you know? The more women involved, the more everyone has a fair shake. So it was nice that there were other women in bands playing instruments and, you know, making it easier. It made it so that we didn't feel like we stood out so much and, you know, might get a little too much attention, the wrong kind of attention.
That's interesting. So do you think that anything needs to change with punk to make it more accepting of women or more open to women?
I think, well, I mean, you could insert any word there instead of punk, right?
Like, that's fair.
What can we do to make blank more accepting to women? And, you know, many of the common answers are going to be and just include more women. Have more women around in the planning process. Have more women on the stage when it comes to music. You know, we have lots of women behind the scenes that do amazing work, but are they getting paid as much as the men doing the same job? And that's really great for all the people in the bands, but when you have more women on stage, that's really great for the people in the audience. Mm-hmm. And only when you have more women on stage are you going to see more women picking up instruments to start bands of their own. We need representation. And I think that encouraging more women to be on stage, paying women in bands the same or more than men in bands, that's how you start. Or even giving more women and like LGBTQ, especially trans folks in bands, a leg up. Like, they're a new band, we'll let them open, let them get more experience. Like, there should never ever, like starting now, there should never ever be another bill where it's only cis white guys, like ever again.
All right, there's enough bands. The rule. That's Shauna's rule right
there's
now.
There's enough bands out there. Like, you don't have to do it. And there's plenty of mediocre dudes. Like, why not a mediocre lady? You know?
give the mediocre ladies a chance too.
Give please. Us a chance to be mediocre and just get by just like you do. Come on.
All right, well, I imagine that your new record's not going to be mediocre.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
So tell me about that. You don't have a release date, you said, but have you finished recording?
Yeah, we finished recording. We finished mastering, too, and finished the artwork. So we really are just waiting to hear back from, I think, the vinyl press plant.
Oh, you're doing vinyl.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Bridge 9. We're putting it on Bridge 9 again, and they love doing vinyl, and we love that they love that. Yeah. So I think we're just kind of waiting on that information to decide on the actual release date. And we're really excited about it. We had a new drummer play on the record, and it was really cool to have his influence on it. And the songs are different. I might, you know, honestly, I've been wondering, like, I don't even know if we're like a hardcore punk band anymore.
Oh,
like, it might be more just like heavy rock.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't
like
know.
To see that side of things.
Yeah. Well, I kept trying to just be more yelly and thrashy and screamy, and then I just would want to sing it. And so we just tried to find a good balance so that no one is too shocked when they listen to it. But I don't know. It's hard to write the same yelling song over and over again.
Yeah. Because often when I talk to a punk band or a band that like kind of has a genre you can point to, I ask, well, are you comfortable trying to work within that or do you break out of it? So the fact that you're kind of moving on to something different is a little bit interesting. So do you feel like that's keeping the band fresh for you?
Definitely.
So how did that evolution happen?
I mean, I think it was fairly natural. It's not something super forced. I think, you know, Brooks and I have been, like I said, in bands. We've been writing music together for a long time. And we always are, every record, every project, changing it up a little bit because we have to stay interested. And we want other people listening to not just think like, well, this is just like their last record, so why should I buy it? So it definitely kept things fresh. And honestly, I was having a hard time personally writing melodies that were the same. Mm-hmm. Like I just couldn't do it. So I just kind of let myself move on a little bit. And then if I got too far away and I had Brooks there to say, why don't you try yelling that? I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. We work well together, actually.
So can people expect, when you say hard rock, maybe like a Led Zeppelin kind of thing?
No. I mean, I think I'm exaggerating a bit. It's a little bit of a joke. But because I define punk differently than I think other people do, or how it's defined now, like, and it's so hard sometimes to pin down a genre, like what bands actually sound like versus what they look like versus what they say they sound like. Like, I think those can be three different things. So I don't know. I think it's still like a hardcore punk band, but you know, there's always a little thrash in there because that's what we like. Mm-hmm. But there's some stuff that's just kind of heavy rock. I don't know. I'm kind of waiting for the thing to be reviewed so that I can know what genre right. to call us.
Then you know what to tell
yeah people I will wait the... for if the New York Times wants to review this next record, I will wait for their advice. No, just kidding, don't let anyone define you. Okay.
No, well, that sounds like it's going to be awesome. So you had a new drummer. How did that change things? Was that a big influence?
I think so. Yeah, actually. So Brooks and I are in our old band. We got our drummer from that band to play drums on this record from Avec. Yeah, Scott Tiemann. And he's an incredible drummer. He has a jazz drumming background. Oh, he teaches drums to... I don't know specifically, but it's basically to young people that have some sort of mental challenge, some, you know, issues that they have to deal with as part of music therapy. I don't know, unfortunately, anything more specific, like what school or anything, but, and he gives drum lessons. Like he's a fucking drummer. Do you know what I mean? like this is his thing. Yeah. This is his deal. Like he plays the drums. So, and of course, like him and Brooks, you know, grew up listening to early Metallica, like thrash records. And I discovered it a little bit later. I think they cut their teeth on it, but I was a little late to it. But you know, I think for Scott, it was really fun for him to kind of get those chops back up and get that fast again. Mm-hmm. But you know that, like, we knew by bringing him into the project that he thinks about drums in a certain way, and we wanted that. We wanted that creativity, and we didn't want it to be super basic, cookie cutter hardcore band drums.
Sure.
You know, we just want to keep it interesting for us and anyone listening.
What is your writing process? That's what I was going to ask. What's your writing process? How do you come up with songs?
Me personally or the band?
Well, the band.
Band. Well, no one can stop Brooks from writing riffs. It's just 24/7 he's thinking about guitar riffs. So he puts them down and records them. And so usually by the time we think of like, oh, hey, maybe we should think about new songs, he's like, cool, I've got like 20 ideas. Yes. So it's hard. Well, obviously we can and are able to write songs all together. we oftentimes pull from things that he already has at least started, mm-hmm. because the guy can't help it, you know?
He's a machine.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't stop it if I tried. So why even bother? But so he comes up with ideas. We work on things together. I wrote one of the main riffs to one of the songs on the new record, which I haven't done yet in this band. Like in our last band, I play guitar and wrote songs and sing. But this is the first time I wrote a little something for War on Women. And lyrically, like, I'm always just jotting down ideas and things that come to me. And every now and again, you know, there's always a few songs on a record where the whole song just comes out at once. But a lot of times it's just, oh, let me pull these ideas and, oh, I think I have something that might sound good with that riff and let me experiment with that, you know. So it's very malleable and definitely a process that I enjoy.
So what was the transition going from a guitar player to a front woman? Like,
it was weird.
Yeah.
It felt really weird. I've been playing guitar since I was 12. Like, that's
a long time.
Yeah, that's how I learned to write songs, you know? So to not have that guitar in front of you, like, it really did feel like a shield in some ways, a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's more like I didn't want it to be a crutch. I didn't want it to become a crutch. And so I knew that with this new band called War on Women, I wanted to just be a front person, kind of just to see if I could do it. Because mm-hmm. maybe it turned out I couldn't and I didn't like it and I wanted my guitar back and whatever. But once I sort of got over that mental idea of like, oh, you're just the singer. Which no one tells any man in a band,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, so once I kind of got over that and started to not feel like I had the weight of gender kind on my on my shoulders, then I realized I really, really like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like moving around. I like dancing weird and not caring what I look like and kind of, you know, showing people all the different ways, all the different, you know, feelings and vibes that women can have and just being human on stage and not sexy, you yeah, know, right. the whole time, not pretty the whole time. I think that's actually kind of important and I wish I could have seen more of that when I was growing up.
Sure.
So yeah, I like it now, but who knows? You never know.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you if I go back that to one it. Guitar song. For,
you're right. I did.
This new one, so.
Which is definitely the most, this is your exclusive scoop here to everyone listening. It's definitely like the most Tom Petty sounding song by War on Women ever. That's what we call awesome. It, the Tom Petty song.
We're breaking news. It's the Tom Petty song.
Because I love him so much. I miss you.
Did you write that after he passed? Was it like
no.
a memoriam? Oh, wow.
No, I wrote it like a year ago. When
what
we
a
were...
weird coincidence. Well, I guess that's not a coincidence.
I mean, we were finishing the record and, you know, finishing mixing it. And when he died, and so I was like, oh, now we at least we have that song.
Yeah, your Tom Petty song.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So you don't know when that's coming out quite yet. But
Spring of next year.
Spring of next year. What other things do you have coming up in the future?
We have some acoustic performances. We're doing this festival called Changeville in Gainesville, Florida in February. And then we might have something going on in Las Vegas in April. I'm not quite sure yet. And then we're actually working on getting shows at colleges. What we really want to do is bring our show to universities and colleges and participate in a Q&A or a panel, or I can do a workshop on bystander intervention and making spaces safer, which is something I do at home all the time. And so if anyone out there is listening and they want us to come to your school, like we can offer a lot. And I just want to, yeah, I just kind of want to talk about our songs with young people and talk to them about being good allies and being good to each other, you know?
That's positive. That's good. Well, talk to me a little bit about that. Just some bullet points. What kind of things do you teach with bystander intervention? What are some things that people should know if they want to make scenes safer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I just, in case anyone doesn't know, I started the Hollaback chapter in Baltimore, which is an anti-street harassment organization. And kind of through that, I started realizing that Okay, well, if you're harassed on the street, you just go to our app and you fill out the story, and that's awesome. But what happens when you are harassed in a building, you know? And I thought there's a lot of opportunity. Obviously, harassment doesn't just happen on the street.
Right.
So what can we do? What kind of power do people have to prevent it and also just deal with it appropriately? So I go into, I focus mainly on like community spaces, DIY spaces, privately owned, you know, not a chain store. Obviously, I'm not going to teach Barnes & Noble because they have a giant HR department for that and they should be paying out victims anyway. So I go into spaces where there's not that much money and they just need to learn how to be victim-centered and, you know, make the space feel better for everyone. So I tell people, most of all, the number one thing to do when someone comes forward and tells you, like, hey, I was just harassed, is just believe them. Just first and foremost, believe them. Take them at their word. Even if it's not, doesn't seem like harassment to you, even if you would have been like, oh, I would have liked it if someone said that to me. Doesn't matter. It was harassment to them. And that's what matters in that moment. So believe them and then validate their experience. Maybe even mirror their language, you know, like say like, oh, that does sound scary. If that's what they say it felt like, you know, use those active listening skills, right? Nod your head, look them in the eye, right? And then you can get into, okay, what can we actually do about it? So sometimes that means asking, you know, what kind of listener do you want right now? You want to just vent about this? And I can say, yeah, that guy sucks. Or do you want me to see what I can do about it? Do you want me to follow up? Do you want me to get someone? That's called delegating. Do you want me to get someone of authority here, the security guard, and tell them what's going on so you don't have to? It's really like there's like these 5 D's of bystander intervention that are really common. Anyone can look them up because I'm pretty sure I'll forget one of them while we're talking. Sure. But one is to delegate, get someone else to help, because not everyone that experiences this or is in the situation is comfortable confronting a harasser, right? For whatever reason. So you can delegate. You can also distract. You can distract the harasser. And ask them the time, ask them, oh, when's the next band going on? Talk about their shirt. Just something that gives the victim a second to get away. Mm-hmm. And then there's also direct confrontation where you really just say to the harasser, like, hey, you can't do that. You can't do that here. That goes against our safer space policy. Please cut it out. And, you know, I tell venues a lot, that you're not there to be a cop or a detective or get to the bottom of the case. It doesn't matter. You don't need a guilty verdict, right? Yeah. You just need the person to know that you're talking to, that what they're doing is being interpreted in a way that makes someone feels uncomfortable. So let's stop doing that thing. You know, you're not saying you're a terrible person, get out of here, no one likes you. You're just saying, I need you to stop doing this thing. Mm-hmm. And that people are able to take that a little bit better than just like, you suck, you're a harasser, get out of here. Because it's not about that. If you start sending every harasser or abuser out of town, well, they're just going to go to another town and do it there.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting because the whole point of just like stopping the act as opposed to like investigating, that's not something I would have thought about. So glad I asked you.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So how can people learn more about that aspect of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, if they just want to look up Hollaback Baltimore, there's going to be a lot of information there about how to be a good bystander. And then also, I do go into places and do workshops and do trainings, and I am available for hire. So I can come to your school, I can come to your workplace. I can make your small business a safer space, an official Hollaback Baltimore safer space, if I come in and train you. And, you know, it's 100% volunteer run. I don't make money doing it unless someone's kind enough to actually pay me for my time and expertise. And I'm getting better at, you know, actually asking sure. for that kind of thing.
It can be hard to do.
You know, when you do this kind of work, it's really easy to just give too much of yourself. And I've been doing that a really long time, and I don't want to do that anymore. You know, I want to be able to keep doing it. And the only way I can keep taking off work to train people is if I get paid to do those trainings. I need to pay my rent. So I think that's kind of an important lesson for anyone that's doing social justice work or, you know, just is invested in volunteering. It's okay to ask for even just like when someone, right, there's that thing where like if you're a professional journalist and someone wants to ask you, how do I become a journalist? Then you say, well, buy me coffee and I'll tell you. Like, I'm not just going to tell you everything I've learned over the past 10 years for free. Like, at least take me to coffee or drink or something, yeah. Right? I think that's just kind of it's a professional courtesy that acknowledges that someone has put the time in and they know what they're talking about.
It shows value, yeah.
Yeah. And that's hard. That's hard to do when you know, you're not a journalist, you're a volunteer, you're an activist. It's hard to get to that point where you think what you do is worth it.
Switching gears back to War on Women, a lot of the bands I've talked with haven't gone on tours or huge tours yet. So talk to me a little bit about the touring experience. What kind of things did you learn? Do you have any interesting stories?
I mean, yes. That's really tough because I've been touring since I was 14.
Oh, have you? Okay.
Yeah. So it's been like 20 years of just of every kind of touring, every level, every state, every weather, you know, playing by ourselves or opening up for other bands or doing a festival. Like it's just a lot. And frankly, I don't have a good enough memory. Like it's a lot of it's a blur. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of like load in, load out, and oh, is it time to go? Did you get paid? Okay, cool. Go to the couch where you're sleeping. So, I mean, probably my biggest aha moment was bringing along my own white noise machine.
Oh, yeah.
Which I bet sounds that was so a game decadent. Changer. Oh my God, it sounds so like decadent, but it makes it so that I can go to sleep in a lot of different and weird places. Yeah. And frankly, if I don't sleep well, I get sick. I'm one of those people. So sleeping to me is super, super important. I can't sleep in a moving car. Like I'm like the fucking princess and the pea when it comes to sleeping. It's terrible. It's really frustrating actually. So the white noise machine, everybody out there, get one for the band and you'll be set. You'll be set. And then obviously, you know, I'm vegan, or I really do my best to be vegan, and so having my own snacks and stuff.
Yeah, that must be kind of a challenge when you know, you can't put much time into where you're going to eat.
It's a lot easier than it used to be. I'll tell you that. I'm not someone that minds Taco Bell, right? Like, that's fantastic. So I'm cool with Taco Bell and Subway and making that work. But having my own snacks so that I don't get hangry.
Yeah.
That's good for everyone, you know? So things like that, things to manage the common reasons why people get frustrated and get annoyed at each other, like just tamping that stuff down and like just trying to sleep if you can and get a good night's rest. Don't drink too much. Eat as well as you can. Don't get sick. You know, it's really, really basic stuff, but it makes the experience a lot better. And then, of course, I'd say just be nice to everyone that works at the club and the other bands. They're not there to serve you. Actually, you're all on the same team.
It's always disappointing when someone's like rude to someone at a club. It's like, why?
I know. It's a shame. And I've seen it. And I mean, I think we're in a unique position because, I mean, just as a woman who is been playing in bands for a long time, there's been plenty of people that work at clubs that are rude to me, mm-hmm. you know, because they automatically don't take me seriously or they sexualize me or objectify me. But I still try to take the high road and kind of be the best example of a female musician you can be, like know how my gear works and help carry things in and, you know, just do all that stuff. But honestly, anyone that's like objectifying a female musician, like fuck you and go away.
That's fair.
And by go away, I mean go look on the internet as to why that's bad and then just stop doing it and then keep coming to shows. That's what I mean by that.
Oh, man. So you've been at this music thing for a very long time. And did you start, like, I think I read you're from Texas. Mm-hmm. Did you start back in Texas?
Or? Yeah, I mean, that's when I got my first guitar for Christmas, okay, kind of thing. But I didn't really start playing with other people until I moved to Nashville, okay, which is, I moved there like right when high school was starting. So that I found, and Nashville is an easy city to find people that play, yeah, instruments, that's for sure. So
I hear it's amazing for that.
Yeah, so it was cool. You know, I was in a band with women, like, from the beginning. It wasn't until Avec, actually, that I was in a band with only men, that I was the only woman. So that's pretty cool, I think.
What was it like playing in Nashville versus Baltimore? Like, I imagine there's a lot of differences.
There are. I mean, it is definitely, like, Music City, USA, for a reason. Everyone's dad is a studio musician. So they all have... Every kid I knew, like, had a guitar or could play something, and was playing in band. Like, there were so many bands that no one wanted to see your band because their band was also playing somewhere, or they were too busy with their own stuff. So that was actually really frustrating. You know, none of my friends, I never felt like, oh, I had a bunch of friends coming to see me play all the time, because all my friends were in bands, so they were doing their own thing. But in Baltimore, I think there are a lot, I mean, I think there's also a lot of bands, but I think that there's a lot of different kind of bands and different scenes. And so it, in a way, there's enough to sustain it all. There's people to come out. And I feel like I'm friends with people in bands that don't sound like us, obviously, which is cool. And it's not like every person I meet, like, their dad handed them a guitar when they were, you know, 14.
No. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of interesting stuff going on. And it's kind of weird, the different circles, because, like, I'd be interested to know, because I know that there's, like, rappers and things, and, like, I hear about jazz going on. It's just like, mm-hmm, if you play in a rock band, it's like a whole different world. You don't really see that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. Like, there's so many little venues. And yeah, I'm never, like, if I really need to leave the house and get out and be entertained, like, there is always something going on in Baltimore. And I think that's a really lovely thing.
Yeah. Playing with dudes in the band. how was that? The transition from playing an all-female group to having men in the band, was that just natural, or?
It felt different at the time, but I think because of my age and just not having a ton of experiences, I don't know if I would think about it the same today as I did back then. Like, I thought it was... I mean, I certainly want to look at everyone as individuals, too. I wouldn't say there was some sweeping, oh, all the dudes, they always do this. You know, there was nothing like that. But I was in a band with different people, whereas my last band, I'd basically been in that band with the same people for years, like all of high school. So it was just weird to change it at all. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to. That could be a whole other hour conversation. So maybe not.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, being in a band, what I like about War on Women is that we're a mixed gender band, and it's not just all women. It's not all men. And I think that that is very nice. And I think it's a good visual representation of how feminism should work. We should all be working together for the greater good. And I like that about our band a lot.
Sure. Yeah. When you guys write, is it kind of democratic, on equal footing? Like, does everybody kind of contribute their own parts, or how does that work?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I guess we'll kind of wrap things up here. I always wind down by asking what advice people would have for new musicians. But before we get to that, is there anything else you want people to know about, or anything else you want to add?
Just that if you've heard me speak and I have a lisp, it's because I have these, like, clear braces on, and I'm learning how to talk with them in, and I have to keep them in so that my teeth keep moving the way they should.
I was singing with
those. That's what I really want people to know, is that I probably sound strange, and it's not you. It's me.
I was singing with those, or do you?
I've taken them out. But I mean, I've only had one. We only had one acoustic performance since I got these. I've only had them for a few weeks, so that's another reason why I'm like, how does this thing work in my mouth? But I took them out because I didn't want to. Because how do you sing when you have when you have these like weird plastic trays on your teeth? It's a really weird thing to be like, why do I drool all of a sudden as a person? I never did that before, but I do now.
Well, you know, it spices up your day. You never know. You're just going to.
It keeps things interesting. That's for sure. So next topic.
Yeah. All right. So I'll hit you with that last question. Okay. Let's say there's like a 10-year-old and they maybe are thinking about picking up a guitar. What do you want them to know?
Get a tuner.
Yes.
Number one, just have a tuner. Just tune your instrument. Just learn how to tune your instrument and everything's going to be easier. Also, get a good setup. It costs $75, but if you don't want to be fighting your instrument while you're learning how to play, you want it to be as easy to play as possible. So get that set up, get that action down, get it in tune, so that when you play the chord right, it sounds like you're playing it right. Mm-hmm. So you're encouraged to keep going. Now, obviously, I work in a repair shop. I fix amplifiers and other music gear for a living. So I'm a little biased, of course, when it comes to what I'm saying, you know, get a tuner, get a setup. But for the non, you know, amp tech advice, I would just say, don't let anyone stop you. Play what you want to play. And it's okay to get good, especially for all the little girls out there. Yeah, get better than all the boys you know. Who cares? Like, don't let them make you feel bad or weird that you're better than them. Be better than them. There's no... And if they don't find you... They don't think you're cute. They don't want to date you because you're a better guitar player than them. Oh, well, forget about it. Like, you don't need them. Like, they're showing you who they are. You don't need that kind of guy, right? Like,
they weren't worth your time anyway.
They're not worth it. Like, they're not worth it. You deserve better. So get better than them and show them what's what. And then, yeah, just, you know, figure out what kind of music you like. And if you're deciding on what gear to buy, just see what, you know, the people that play that kind of music, what are they playing? What kind of gear are they using? Which bass sounds better to you? Like, things like that, you know? And just take your time and don't let anyone make you feel stupid because you don't know anything. It's okay if you don't know anything when you don't know anything.
Right. You don't need to hide that.
Yeah, like, if you're just beginning, no matter what age you are, if you're just starting out, if someone's condescending to you because you just want more information, again, go to another source. Go somewhere else. You deserve better than that, too.
Awesome. Well, Shauna, thank you so much for letting me pick your brain. I hope everybody picks up the new album when it's out.
Hey, me too. To it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.